Welcome everyone. I would also like to pay my respects to the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and to really extend a welcome to all our Aboriginal friends that may be here today and pay respects to their elders past and present. Today I'm going to talk about what I call the digital records evolution. It is about, and it's an evolution, not a revolution, because it's constant change. But I'm really going to focus today on the elements of what we do that are really relevant and we're dealing with, or maybe not dealing with, but we're certainly focused on in a digital government. You will be aware that recently that the government's first digital government strategy was released. And it's really quite a profound document because it sets a direction for government without mandating what must be done. It sets a high-level framework for a move to digital government business, and a substantial move in the next few years. So I suppose most relevant, or one of the things that's really relevant, that in 2019, 70% of government transactions should be digital. And that there's some underlying pillars that I'm going to use today that sort of link back. I'm not going to talk through the strategy per se, but just pull out some key points today. Things like, digital on the inside, to be able to think about how we can better shape our systems and our work to be more digital, more agile in the way we deliver that. One of the concepts that's talked about is digital by design. We have a complementary one, we talk about it as records by design. I'm going to talk about a bit about that later. Big focus on legacy systems. Government's very keen. They realise there's this incredible latent cost in maintaining legacy systems. We also have an issue with that. I'm going to talk about that and maybe what we're doing today, but also what we may have to do in the future with that. Out of that, I suppose what we're seeing is, and you'll see through my presentation, is different uses of data, and I'm calling data records. I'm being quite broad in my interpretation deliberately, because I think that's how we need to think about it now. That records are not just a traditional paper file. The records, the information, the data, it's a combination of things that make what we do today even more important in a digital context. So with that, I will quickly go on. So, look, just in summary, I often use this to just sort of set a bit of a summarise what we do and the services we offer and why they're important and the agency responsibilities. So, in our legislation, State Records Act, it defines functions of the authority, but it also defines responsibilities on agencies. Clearly, there's a responsibility for agencies to keep full and accurate records so that it is traceable and, you can go back and you can interrogate the decisions that have been made, and there's a record of that. Agencies have a responsibility to establish a records management program. Again, I don't think there's anything terribly surprising about that. Preservation and protection of records, I think that's one of the reasons that the Act came about, was to ensure that there was a better management of records across its whole life cycle. And there's also this end, at the end of the life, especially with an electronic or digital system, ensuring that the access of technology-dependent records are available. That's probably one of our biggest challenges today, and part of that's around our Act too. Our services can be summarised in four very high-level areas, and probably the two I'm going to really focus on today are going to be the government record keeping and the digital area. But the other pieces are no less significant, in fact, very important to the overall running of our organisation. Government record keeping, which has sponsored this event today, Sally's acting manager, they do provide that level of governance and guidance and advice, and also compliance and regulation when needed. The government records repository is our commercial business, which provides all the storage management services for agencies. we estimate we probably deal with about, I don't know, 70 or 80% of government agencies. Have I clicked it? Have I? Hold on. Jeez, I've gone too fast. What's that mess up? Oh, well, there you go. I'm going to take about 10 minutes there. But government records repository, I think many of you know what that is. Digital State Archive is a digital term, and we'll be doing a lot of work. Well, they're also already doing a lot of work, so I haven't spoiled all the surprises. And the newly formed Collection Access and Engagement team brings together all the archive management services with public access into one team under new director Adam Lindsay, who's standing in the back of the room. So I'm going to focus today on digital government, and we feel there are a number of enablers that we have in place that to actually help digital government. Often it's been said to me that our act can be a roadblock or a stopper for people or organisations being able to comply. It makes it too difficult. I'd actually, I'm really keen on to actually talk about that, because I think often that comes out. I don't think it's necessarily a stopper. I think there's probably, it's not clear how to implement things, and that's really what we're trying to do going forward, is to make it clearer, easier, more simple, especially from a compliance perspective. These are some of the elements I'm going to talk about today. So we've adopted by design approaches, and that means before we even build something or buy something, we're thinking about how we're going to manage that information, those records, that data through its life cycle. If you do that properly, we're going to get simplified compliance too. And that's going to make it easier for agencies, especially chief executives, who have the responsibility of saying, oh yes, we're compliant, to, watch this thing, it's very dangerous, to actually do that. Digital transformation, we're sort of all involved in that. But I think the other big one here is the customer-centric nature, you know, making sure the customers and clients are at the centre of what we do. You'll see, this is an interesting slide, because it actually starts to bring together some of the things I've been talking about. We're seeing now in government, especially in the ICT and digital government team that we're a part of, that there's a much different use of data and information today. Aggregation of data is happening. For those of you that use the FuelWatch app, you know, that's a government application, but none of the sources of information are from government. They're all coming from industry. So there's this aggregation happening at a government level, and something is produced which is actually used and useful to the public. There's a lot of analysis and interpreting of data underway. Again, within the Data Analytics Centre, they're doing this a lot at the moment. They're trying to actually predict when things might happen and try and give government information that they can use and to make better decisions and data-driven decisions. And I suppose the benefit of this is, one of the benefits is hopefully improve social and economic outcomes for the community. So there's some of the unique things that are happening. And I think our challenge is, what frameworks do we need to actually help support that? So we're not getting in the way of the work happening, but we're actually making it easier for the agencies to do their work. Down here in this, just down here, I think I've just put a captured a number of new forms of what we call born digital records or sources that we see happening today, and some of those is relevant for us. We had the recent presidential election, and putting all the politics aside, I think most people would understand and agree that it was a very different sort of election, one driven directly with direct engagement through social media a lot with the constituents. In Australia, we've had, for a long time, we've had things like Twitter, and that is actually an extract from, I think it's Cyclone Yasi back in 2011, up in Queensland, where Cyclone Yasi, none of the media crews could get in there to actually film and record what was going to happen. It was all coming out of people's lounge rooms through Twitter and Facebook and became the media source. And then locally in New South Wales especially, we have very good rural fire service where we're getting community information directly out. So social media's got a really important aspect of what we do. At a ministerial level here, of course, we see it ourselves, and we see, you know, ministers and government officials especially using social media to communicate. So social media is obviously one of the challenges we have. And this slide was, intended to try and do that. Now, up at the top, up here, I'll just talk about this for a second. So Minister Dominello has a number of D's that he talks about quite often. It was about 5, it's now up to about 9, 8. So we, and I was with the Minister's office the other week, and I said, I'd like to add another D, and it's durable. Because I think we need to think about durability of data so that it is going to persevere and it's going to last and it's going to be preservable in the future. They actually like that, so they just think now we just need a 10th to actually balance it right up. So we'll see what happens. But you'll hear more about durable as we go through this. Brings me on to the next thing. So Digital State Archives, I mentioned the team before. They've done some amazing things, and one of the things that we did in 2014 was we started a project just to, we realised, we put up a bid, fairly large bid for digitisation, which wasn't funded, but it was very useful for us too because it enabled us to understand what was in our collection. And we realised through that we had actually about $70 million worth of asset value in a $900 million collection, really at risk. Facing substantial risk over the next few years. So we started a digitisation project, just targeting these critical information, critical sort of records and archives. And we digitised material dating from about 1870 through to 2000. The 2000, no surprise, it was the Sydney Olympic original footage. Already on, oops, I'm not getting the hang of this cell. There we go. There, that one. We're at risk in 2014, 14 years after the Olympic Games, of losing all that, and it was sitting in our archives. The reason for that was it was shot on an obscure, cutting-edge technology, a DVC Pro 50C, I think it was, a tape, and it was only used by commercial networks for about 2 or 3 years and then superseded by something else. And so we're at risk of losing all that. Shot in 4x3 landscape. It's now been fully converted from digital to digital. And this is part of the problem with digital. It's really good, but you know, the preservation of it is a real issue for a long period. So the Digital State Archives team was born in 2011 in State Archives and Records. And it came out of a need to actually provide a means to preserve digital material, and it's done a number of things. Transcripts from royal commissions that were not accessible, for example, and various other things are now preserved in that. We realised through that, though, that we need now have something more expansive to actually underpin government. I'll talk about that because it's that future-proofing that is so important as a preservation means, just as a preserving a physical item is so important as well. And I suppose a number of the slides here, they show different things. So this shows up here, this is actually going back to 2014, was the digitisation of the Carrington albums that were repatriated back to New South Wales from Lord Carrington's family in England. They relate to Lord Carrington, who was governor here from 1885 to 1890. So there's 22 of these albums. They're very colourful, beautiful. They're almost like bits of art, beautiful illuminated addresses. But they're complex material to do. They're expensive to digitise. And then down here on the bottom is one of the things we did salvage, or I should say we, the Digital Archive team did. But that is actually the opening screen from the Chelmsford Royal Commission. So that whole system is now preserved digitally after building up an emulator for that. Taking this a step further and trying to, again, be simple about the areas we work on, we sort of see there's three key areas that we work on external to government, which is where our customers live up here. Government customers live. Government's always trying to engage with the community and doing more and more digital today. So we call that our digital engagement level. And it could be through things like social media, just the underlying platforms that we have to be conscious of, or cloud-based solutions or whatever. So we talk about, that's our digital engagement layer. But then in government, and there's 375 public offices that come under the State Records Act. There's state-owned corporations, statutory authorities, universities, there's local health districts, local councils, 217 government agencies and about 10 clusters. So it's a very big group. So government-to-government work or public-office-to-public-office work, we actually treat that as a separate area. And again, just like I talked about with the data aggregation, there's all different levels of activity. And we need a framework and advice that are relevant to those groups there so they can do their work. And then underneath this, to support us and support government going forward, we need to be able to make that data more durable. And we're currently working at the moment on taking a digital state archives of the concepts, the engineering and the science that's gone into that to see if we can get a whole of government preservation capability to make government assets, or well, when I say government, public office assets durable. So we call that a supporting government framework. So that makes up our ecosystem. If anyone's got any questions on any of that, or just, you know, please sing out. Right. So give you an example of one of the challenges that we have been faced with. 18th of January, Premier Mike Baird announced he was resigning, did so. He announced on Twitter and Facebook, and then the next day he deleted his Twitter account, and that went through a slow decommission process. And so that created a few challenges, and we've been working the last few months to secure those, or sort of a few months following that, to secure those accounts, because they are actually state records because of the nature of how they were used. And so he's fine with that, and he was very cooperative. So it led us to the next problem. Well, how do we actually provide, what do we need to do at this level so that you know, ministers especially can use whatever tools available to them to do their job, communicate easily, but we've got the capture mechanism underneath. So this is a bit of work that my team have been doing to actually nut out a framework for this. And this would sit underneath one of these. Really? It make it quite seamless. But it talks about sort of the different responsibilities, and I think we're going to make these slides available. So we haven't quite finished this, but this is now going to have to go back, and we'll have some more discussion with DPC in particular, and see if we can get a pilot up for doing this. But this would enable us to actually quite easily manage a social media record in a New South Wales environment. So that's one of the challenges we've got. So we're looking at social media, but also the cloud-based issue as well. There's many collaborative tools being considered or in use across government and public office at the moment. You know, there's many, you know, I was asked recently, we just need to know when our people are going to make create a state record. And I said, well, actually, everything you're doing, that's a state record. It's just, you know, it just depends how, there might be different levels of importance applied to those. So we are doing a lot of work in that to try and help design frameworks, or at least, I suppose, checklists, or that's not even the right way, but I suppose guidance to agencies on how they might implement something like this, and the pitfalls, because essentially it comes down to probably a risk management approach. You know, to look at the sort of information you've got, the usage you've got in your own organisation, the sensitivities that an agency head has about how their information is used, and being able to apply that consistently in this sort of a format. So that's what we're trying to get ahead of the curve on, one of the things. The other thing that we're doing, and again, Digital Archives team are doing, is what I call the, it's one of the challenges in implementing a records by design to achieve simplified compliance. So if you think about, you know, what the issue is, it's really, I think it's really a very big data issue that we're dealing with. And it makes it, that makes itself a big issue by its very nature. Most of that is unstructured data. And that means, you know, how does an agency, how do you actually then make it easy to, how do you give yourself a level of comfort that you can comply and you can retain those records that are actually important? Clearly, we've got labelling and classification schemes that come in, but they're all being revised at the moment, and that will still need some sort of automatic help or auto help or auto sentencing capability. So one of the things that so one of the things Glenn and Richard have done is that they've prepared a white paper on machine learning. So machine learning is an artificial intelligence technology. It is used to, it can be trained to actually go through and help auto sort and categorise records and information, whatever you want to define. Now, it's not perfect and it's probably not going to be, but for a long time, if ever. But I think it's very interesting from the paper they'll put up, which will be released, I think, next week. Just to see the inroads that has been made into that. It's certainly one of the ways that we're going to have to think and be smart about how we manage this data going forward so that we're not having to manually intervene. You know, we need to have our digital systems and our digital record management systems that are going to be supportive of the sort of work going on, knowing that we're not going to have abundance of people to do this, but we need to be able to trust the technology. So what I say is the why, I think it's going to help simplify sorting and sensitivity of unstructured data. We know it's not going to be perfect. You know, if we can get that sort of 70% reliability or accuracy out of it and leaving the you know, 20 or 30% of information there that is, you know, needs to be manually or have some other process applied to it, well, it's a big start, because just email alone is a huge enough problem for every agency to deal with. So that's what this is really about. We're sort of on this journey of how we implement this records by design. So at the planning stage, I'll give you a bit of an insight into some of the things that we're looking at from a technology perspective. I've talked a bit about durable, and all I can say is, look here, it's really dealing a lot of time with technology obsolescence. And they come to us late, you know, 25 years after the system's finished, been turned off, it's been migrated, and we get a pile of disks. And often, there's a lot of work to be done to do that. So we're actually having an interesting discussion as we look through. We're coming after a 20-year anniversary on our Act next year. I wonder if it might be time to do a bit of freshen up on some of the digital sentencing capabilities in the Act. And maybe we bring forward, in a digital context or an electronic context, when the system's retired and becomes legacy, maybe then is the time for transfer, not 25 years later. That would make a lot of sense and certainly save a lot of money. So we move that into supportable frameworks. And I might just say, at CARA level, we've got a project going on to look at what are the supportable formats that we should publish, so that, you know, agencies or everyone in Australia that's working in the jurisdictional area has got a reference point to go back and start the planning in their systems and start demanding, you know, no, we want it in these formats going forward, because that will help with the preservation aspect. So I suppose the innovation piece of this presents a huge opportunity for us. There's various areas that we have to collaborate on, and collaboration is key. Digital is really hard. If you're trying to do it and you don't have the collaboration going, it's really hard. You have to sit down, you have to discuss, you know, you have to be able to talk about your problems, talk about the solution, talk about what you're trying to do, and put that together. And I'm hoping on our website soon that we will have this sort of more visible. I'd like us to be able to show you what we're working on and have a pipeline approach, so as you actually put in your own problems. So we don't want you to work on this. this is one that's really difficult for us, and we'll do that together. But the solutions have to be scalable. We have to adopt by design approaches. We have to have the right tools for it, and that will help us be hopefully a valued partner going forward as we move to digital. This is just another way of really looking at what I've said. I'm not going to go through that too much, but I think key to us is we're through Adam's team of collections access engagement, looking at how we expand the public's access to our collections on a whole range of fronts, so that we've got better use of our collection, simplifying that collection and making sure that we're looking forward and forward-looking and future-ready. It brings me to one of my last slides, and I think this is where it starts to get interesting. You think about the skills and the tools that we need and the resourcing we need going forward. There is a real need for us to have digital archivists, you know, to be able to really understand, have really good technology background, but understand and be an archivist in a very modern sense. And we have some of them. We're very fortunate to have some of them at the moment. We're also going to need data scientists too, because this is some of this stuff is really cutting edge. I don't know anywhere else that much of this stuff's being done, and I'm chair of CARA, so I get to see what's happening across Australia and New Zealand. It's happening in pockets, but I think we're really lucky to be in that leadership sort of position. Digital record keeping is a really strong piece of what we're doing and would resonate with all of you. The curation aspect, again, is and user experience comes down to the look and feel and the interaction and the engagement. And then the preservation skills, having that understanding how they apply in a digital sense. I think of some of the internal skills that we're going to need, but externally to that, we can never forget that, I wouldn't say our client, these are our client skills, not yours, but we've got to be better problem solvers, we've got to be good collaborators, and we've got to have a very good, useful dialogue with you going through this journey. And I think if we get that together, then, you know, you bring those elements together, a social, economic, and historic, it does help us add the value that we intend to add and we need to add. So I think with that, I think I'm at the end.
Thank you.